Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
Get your advanced PhD in WOW from Floor and Decor. If you're a pro, you're already an expert in tile, wood, and stone. And with Floor and Decor's job site delivery, their free design services, and pro rewards that actually reward you, your business is set to grow from one client to the next. Floor and Decor isn't just a couple of aisles. It's an entire store designed to help your business boom. It's Floor and Decor.
Brett McKay here, and welcome to another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. Well, last year I had a fellow by the name of Clint Emerson on the podcast. He's a retired Navy SEAL, and he came on the show to talk about his first book, 100 Deadly Skills, The SEAL Operative's Guide to Eluding Pursuers, Evading Capture, and Surviving Any Dangerous Situation. It was one of my favorite episodes from last year and a favorite of listeners as well. Well, Clint's back with another book filled with deadly skills. This time around, it's 100 Deadly Skills Survival Edition, The SEAL Operative's Guide to Surviving in the Wild and Being Prepared for Any Disaster. In it, he, along with AOM illustrator Ted Slampiak, show readers how to survive in any environment they might find themselves, from the desert to the mountains to the sea. The book also covers how to manage disasters at home. Today on the show, Clint and I talk about the mindset needed to survive any deadly scenario, including how to create a tactical nightstand. Yes, a tactical nightstand. How to combat clear your home if you want to do that, and what to do in a carjacking, that and much more. Stay tuned for this for a fun, action-focused podcast. After the show's over, check out the show notes at aom.is/deadlyskills1. Clint Emerson, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Brett, thanks for having me. It's awesome to be back.
Yeah, so I mean, it's been about a year since we had you on the show. You came out with your book, 100 Deadly Skills, The SEAL Operative's Guide to Eluding Pursuers, Evading Capture, and Surviving Any Dangerous Situation. And we got a lot of positive feedback from that episode. People loved it. And your book has gotten a lot of positive feedback with the rest of the public. This was a book that became a New York Times bestseller, sold like hotcakes. I mean, what do you think accounts for the popularity of this kind of subject? Where, you know, you were in the first book, you were talking about how to do anal concealments and how to survive, you know, active shooter situations, which I can understand because that's a thing, or like how to bury a dead body. I mean, I'm sure a lot of that stuff was fun, but there's a lot of actual practical information in there. But what do you think what itch are you scratching here with the book?
Well, with that first one, I mean, as you noted, it had some taboo stuff and taboo sells. I mean, but the bigger piece of it is it followed the theme of A Violent Nomad, which is, you know, trying to push people to be a little more self-reliant, be more reliable on themselves, vice relying on 911 or people around them. And kind of give them some skills that are, you know, nefarious in nature, and most of them developed by bad guys. And, you know, the goal really was, hey, if you know the bad guy's offense, then you can create a better defense. You know, this is the basics to, you know, solid warfare. So that first book certainly hit a bunch of stuff that was entertaining, but at the same time informative. And that's kind of the overarching goal, is you want to give people information that's, you know, easily remembered and digestible, and, you know, give them just what they need to know without all the other rhetoric.
And do you have any idea sort of what your readership was like? I mean, if it made the New York Times bestseller list, that doesn't mean it was just like the survival prepper guys that were buying it. These were like average Joes from every walk of life, I imagine.
Yeah, I mean, it became a, you know, there's some strategy, as you know, with books. You know, we're coming out in October before the holiday season. It's a great stocking stuffer, but at the same time, you know, you got a group of men that have it sitting next to the toilet, and then you have families that have it sitting on the coffee table, and then you have, you know, people that travel, business, that, you know, carry it with them everywhere they go. And I was surprised by the number of females that enjoyed the book because they felt like the skills, all those skills, is something really anyone can do. And I think a majority of the people that bought it were also looking for something new. If you look at, you know, yesterday's survival books, they really don't cover today's threats. And between, you know, the first book and now, definitely the second one, you've got 200 solid skills that are that really become a playbook when dealing with any kind of crisis or threat that may come walking your way.
Right. So yeah, you got a second book out. Again, like with the first, you teamed up with Ted Slampiak, the guy who does a lot of our illustrations on The Art of Manliness. It's 100 Deadly Skills Survival Edition and concentrates, as the title says, on being prepared for surviving just about any scenario in the wild, in urban areas, in your home. So first question there is, how does, and I think you kind of mentioned it earlier, that the yesterday's survival book isn't, they're kind of outdated. So how does the modern landscape make survival a more complicated business than, say, you know, 20 years ago, or even like going back, you know, to primitive times?
Yeah, I think it's interesting. You know, one, the bigger issue these days is complacency. And I think we touched on it last time. I know I touched on it with everybody I've talked to. And we are leashed to technology. And between technology and just natural human behavior to be somewhat, to take shortcuts and be lazy, and always looking for the answers at our fingertips, has really just sucked all of our basic human instincts, you know, kind of away from us. And, you know, when you talk about old school survival skills that, you know, our fathers and our grandfathers used to know, and it was kind of just common knowledge, today no one really knows how to do it anymore, nor do they want to learn it because they feel like they can just Google it. And but the problem is when, you know, when the lights go out, the power goes down, or, you know, bigger state-sponsored cyber attacks start to emerge, you'll find yourself in a very primitive situation, except the difference is you won't have the knowledge. You won't know how to deal with it. There's been, you know, plenty of natural disasters, like you compare it to something like Katrina, where they were surrounded by water, but none of it was drinkable, and no one knew really what to do with all that water in order to make it drinkable. So, you know, even though the book breaks out skills in the wild, the reality is the wild can be in urban environments. It just really depends on the crisis that that you know, brings it in.
Right. That point about cyber attacks, that's interesting, because I think that's going to be a bigger problem. I mean, we just experienced one a few months ago that took out a big portion of the internet. Like, I know it affected our store. There was a DDoS attack, and our store was down for pretty much the entire day.
Yeah. Yeah, it's... I think, you know, we don't give it the credit it deserves. And when you talk about state-sponsored stuff coming our way, whether it's Russia or China, or even if it's just, you know, organizations that are, you know, anti-USA, people forget that it's their cyber infrastructure that controls water, transportation, you know, power grids, all of it can be hacked and then turned off in a split second. And then that's when you're left with, oh, now what do I do? You know, if you can't use your devices, you can't log in, you can't get on your computer, you can't even turn on the lights. Those are those moments when you might want to have some skills in your back pocket.
Right. So to counter that, to be ready for those situations where the wild comes to you, right, for whatever reason, you advocate for people to make themselves crisis proof. Let's talk about mindset of becoming crisis proof. I mean, what is the mindset that people need to develop in order to become crisis proof, as you say?
Yeah. You know, we talk about awareness all the time, but really it still anchors to that. You know, you have to start paying attention. The way I break down awareness is, you know, your personal awareness, that's your projection and demeanor management, how you dress, how you walk, you know, a lot of things you write about, you know, that, you know, what makes a man, and how do you do that without your ego dressing you each day? You know, our egos dress us and want us to, you know, basically be different than the person next to us on the subway. And when in reality, you've got to be the gray guy And so it all starts with your personal awareness, you know, literally looking in the mirror and going, all right, what am I telling everyone by what I'm wearing, how I talk, and what I do, my mannerisms. And then from that, you know, then you get into like third party awareness, you know, understanding that people are looking at you, watching you all the time. And they're forming, you know, they're forming opinions and judging you without even knowing you. And I think we all know that that occurs, but you can manipulate it to a certain degree, especially when we're talking about man versus man type threats out there. And then you have situational awareness, which, you know, I think is overused verbally, you know, and, you know, we always articulate, yeah, situational awareness, but how often do people actually become more situationally aware? And how do you make it a habit, like putting on your seatbelt? There was a time when no one wore seatbelts, and they put annoying buzzers inside your cars, and then they, you know, you can get a ticket. And then over time, it's become something you do and you don't even know you do it. And that's kind of where you got to get awareness. It's not about, okay, I'm going to pay attention all day today, because that's energy consuming. You have to kind of piecemeal it a little bit, you know, like, all right, on the hour, every hour, especially while I'm driving, I'm going to kind of look around and make sure I know what's going on, and slowly introduce it into your world so that it then becomes a habit more naturally. And then of course, cultural awareness. So, you know, what's going to offend people, what doesn't offend people, and making sure you understand the do's and don'ts to the geographical location you're standing on. If you combined all of that together, now what are you doing? You're projecting something much different. You're paying attention to things. You're actually getting educated to a certain degree on kind of the do's and don'ts, whether it's third-party awareness or cultural awareness. And before you know it, mentally now you are, you know, these are all kind of like things you can control, and now you're reducing all of your threat vulnerabilities and hopefully reducing crisis, because, you know, most of the time, the clues and the cues are right there staring us in the face. And it's not until after the event, the incident, or the crisis that you go bang your head against the wall going, God, I saw that coming, but I did absolutely nothing about it.
Right. So it's a great breakdown of the mindset. I mean, what about the like big picture skills, right? So the skills you need for different situations are going to vary, right? Whether you're in a desert situation, or you're surviving a tornado, or you're surviving a riot or whatever. But I mean, are there bigger picture skills that can cross over to all these different domains that you need to have in your back pocket?
Yeah, I think, you know, when we're talking mentally, you know, this is something that's not going to be conditioned just by reading a book or overnight. It's a level of confidence that you've got to have, knowing that, all right, you've got some sort of education in, you know, different, you know, whether it's using the 100 Deadly Skill playbooks or, you know, experience that, you know, that you've accumulated over your life, you combined all that together. And it's all about the confidence that you have when you face these events and taking control of what you can control. You know, it's the only things we can truly control when it comes to any kind of event is preparation and response. And so, mentally, you're literally running through, okay, what can I do right now when I have plenty of time and zero stress that can make me more effective, more efficient, increase survivability when something bad happens? That's all about the prep. You know, there's things you can do, and there's a way that you can think about things. You can what if it, you know, and run scenarios. Then on the response side, which is the other piece you control, those are decisions that you've already made, and now all you do is act them out when a good day goes bad. And so I think if people are mentally, you know, immersing themselves into that what if worst case scenario, okay, what can I do to prep for something like this, whatever that event is, and then how would I properly respond to it? Geez, you've just done far more than the average person to be prepared for that event. And not only are you preparing yourself, now you probably have thought about, well, okay, it's not about just me. It's also my family or maybe the people around me. And you're actually, you know, doing something instead of just sitting there.
Right. So it sounds like you're getting your OODA loop in gear before the event actually happens, before you have to make a decision.
Oh, yeah. You definitely, you know, the OODA loop's great for, you know, dealing with whatever's going on at that moment. But yeah, you certainly I mean, it's a proven fact that you do not want to make decisions in crisis. You want to have that stuff already figured out. So all you do is act on those decisions. You know, any decision made in crisis is going to be a 50-50 chance. Whereas if you kind of think them through and have your decisions already figured out, when you've got more of a clinical, you know, where you have plenty of time and zero stress, you know, that's the ideal spot to make your decisions. And then if something bad happens, you're good to go.
Right. So let's get more specific here. Specific tools and skills a man would want to adopt to learn in order to increase his preparation for a crisis. So in the book, you go over gear and skills for every environment, from the desert to the Arctic to the sea and more. But let's start at home. You have a section devoted to your home. That's where stuff can happen. Disasters can happen. We talked about an everyday carry last time for the violent nomad to consider. But you talk about in the book creating a tactical nightstand. So what items should a guy have close at hand for his tactical nightstand?
Well, you know, the one that's illustrated in the book and what I talk about is kind of overkill. So
yeah, it was a lot of stuff.
It's giving people options, right? I mean, we have, you know, varying degrees of, you know, people. So, you know, you have lethal, non-lethal means of dealing with, let's say, an intruder. And so you want your nightstand to kind of represent and have readily available. You take your nightstand, you really look at it as, you know, your kit, right? You can use it. A lot of guys already do this, but I kind of wanted to formalize a little bit with options. So, you know, you've got to have basic life support, basic defense stuff, you know. You got first aid. You can have that there. You can have everything from a baseball bat to, you know, a firearm of some sort. And then, of course, you can have, you know, like in the illustration, I got body armor. You know, you've got, you know, everything from, you know, I would always pick bear spray over something like mace. You know, bear spray has that distance. It's got a more potent level of pepper in it. And still just as, if not more effective than, you know, mace that, you know, squirts, you know, you got to be very intimate with someone to get that mace across. Whereas with bear spray, you can shoot it 30 feet away. And if you don't have any of those, then I have some improvised stuff like wasp spray or oven cleaner. He's going to cause permanent damage to a guy. But if he's in your house, then he deserves it. But the big legal takeaway from that is don't think for a second if you use wasp spray or oven cleaner and you carry it in like your purse or in your car, well, now you're talking about that's actually breaking the law. Most people think that would be okay if you can use mace, but it's a difference between pepper and chemicals. So when it's your own house, your own domain, you can get creative with how you need to take care of an intruder and what you put in your tactical nightstand.
Right. So you need a concealed wasp spray to walk around the city with your wasp spray can.
Yeah, a concealed wasp spray license, right. Yes. Otherwise, it's illegal. And that's kind of, most people don't know that. So whatever you use to defend your home is going to be 100% legal no matter whatever it is, because it's your home, it's your domain. But as soon as you take some of those creative ideas outside your home, you can actually go to jail for it.
All right. So don't get creative outside your home. Well, the other thing on there that I think is extremely useful and completely underrated is a flashlight on your nightstand.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, as you know, I've got some interest in the Zero Trace flashlight, which is, you know, it's waterproof. You can beat people's skull with it and it still works. It's bright as hell. And, you know, so there's so many things. A lot of people want to turn on the lights when they hear a noise in their house. Reality is you know your blueprint better than anyone else. So keep that advantage for you. Keep your lights out. Using a flashlight, you don't want to use it like a spotlight and light everything up, because it's giving up your location. It's giving a bad guy a place to shoot. So you want to use it sparingly. And you also want to hold it away from your chest. Get it out and away from your body. When you're using that flashlight, because if shots are fired, you want them to go, you know, high and right, vice, you know, at your torso. And a common mistake is to kind of, you know, hold it at chest level and point it out in front of you. But that's literally just giving bullets, you know, a place to fly to. And you don't want to do that. But you can also use it as deception too. You know, you can use it to blind a guy and then quickly move. You know, you turn it on, turn it off, and move out of the way. In order to give yourself different advantages tactically if you're having to deal with an intruder in your home. But the book certainly lays out, you know, and of course, Ted did a great job depicting, you know, the kind of like day and night with his illustrations, even though the book is kind of, you know, black and white drawings.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about home invasion, right? This tactical nightstand is there in the event that someone comes into your home illegally to do you and your family harm. So, I mean, how often do home invasions occur? Is it a common thing or is it pretty rare?
It's actually on the rise right now for some reason. You're hearing more and more reports of it. And what used to be, you know, okay, someone, there's two kinds of predators really, and this is very general, but it's a good rule to follow. Anybody who's coming to your home during the day wants your stuff, right? Burglars attack homes during the day because they know everybody's at work and at school. There's, you know, it's more predictable. Whereas someone coming to your home at night typically wants you or wants to harm you. So that's your two divisions there between day and night. And, you know, how you deal with that obviously is going to be dependent on who you are and where you live. And, but the goal is having a plan. You know, having some things prepped, having a proper response, and then, you know, having to deal with that as it comes. You know, I talk about fortifying the home, and it's more than just your property. You know, there was plenty of times overseas before we went into a target. Some targets just knew we were coming, no matter how great we were at being stealthy or, you know, clandestine with our movements and our actions. And the reason being is because, you know, people overseas still operate and, you know that it, you know, quote unquote, takes a village. And so they're watching. Everyone's looking out for one another. And it seems these days in our neighborhoods, no one really even talks to each other, much less have each other's phone numbers so they can text one another if they see something strange in the neighborhood. So that's where I begin is, hey, start talking to your neighbors, start building, you know, some alliances with one another and start looking out for each other so that if something strange rolls through the neighborhood, you can let everybody know. And second to that is, you know, I put in there, me as a professional predator, I'd look at targets, determine their vulnerabilities, and then figure out how best to exploit them. And so I put the reciprocal of that in the book, you know. And it's all about lighting up your, you know, the exterior of your home. The more light there is, the better, because that makes anybody creeping up to your house feel completely vulnerable and naked to a certain degree, and they wouldn't want to deal with it. If you talk to like professional burglars, they avoid homes that have like toys in the front yard because kids are unpredictable. They avoid homes with dogs because no one wants to deal with a dog. They avoid homes that have signage in the front yard, you know, that says alarm system that's clearly visible from the street. You don't want someone coming up to your door to determine whether or not you got good locks or a security system. You don't even want them, you want them to keep them as far away as possible. You know, so a lot of people will focus on locks and yeah, I got an alarm system, so I'm good to go. But both of those systems are literally tested. You know, the bad guy has to test that. It means he's already too close. And we don't want anybody getting that close. We don't even come in our front yard, you know. So you want to push people out with some of these tactics. And for all the single women that potentially are listening, you know, I always say put a pair of size 12 athletic shoes right at the front door to keep the sexual predators away, you know.
All right, so yeah, you want to, so light is key.
Illumination is definitely the number one, you know, when we're talking about, you know, at night, people sneaking up and doing whatever it is they're going to do. And during the day, you know, having a, if they, I don't even know if they make big wheels anymore, but it doesn't matter if you're a parent or not, you've got some kids' toys out in the front yard, that'll keep most of your professional burglars away because it's just, once again, is there a stay-at-home mom? Is there not? Is there kids there right now? I don't know. I'll move on to the next house.
Did you know Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the U.S. with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the United States? They have everything you could possibly want, like fruit trees, palm trees, evergreens, houseplants, and so much more. Fast Growing Trees makes it easy to order online, and your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. So I got a tree from Fast Growing Trees. I had a tree in my front yard that I had to cut down, a big giant oak tree, because it died, and I wanted to put a maple tree there, one that turned bright red during the fall. So I found that tree, made sure that it fit the climate that we're at here in Tulsa, Oklahoma, ordered it. A few days later, I got the tree in a box. It's crazy they can send a tree in a box, and I planted it. A few weeks after I planted it, it's already starting to sprout leaves. So I think in a few years, I'm going to have that bright red maple tree that happens in the fall. I'm really looking forward to that. So if you want to try fast-growing trees out, this spring they have the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off with their first purchase when using code manliness at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using code manliness at checkout. Fastgrowingtrees.com, code manliness. Offers valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Texas Pete is the sauce that allows you to sauce like you mean it. Each Texas Pete sauce is packed with a bold, balanced flavor. The signature tanginess is what makes it a legendary hot sauce that can be used on just about anything. You're definitely going to want to try every flavor. The original hot sauce has a famous secret blend of fermented peppers. Their hotter hot sauce is 3 times hotter than the original, and it's not for the faint of heart. They also got a flavor called Sabor by Texas Pete, adds authentic Mexican flavor, and they also have a dust dry seasoning that matches the flavor of the original hot sauce in a flavorful dry rub. But the flavor that I've been enjoying lately is the Chop Sriracha sauce. It's got chili, garlic, and some tropical tangy notes. It's really good. I love putting on my eggs. Texas Pete, sauce like you mean it. Visit TexasPete.com and use the store locator to find Texas Pete products, as well as purchase sauces and get recipe inspiration. And you can use promo code PODCAST24 for 20% off at TexasPete.com. That's PODCAST24 for 20% off at TexasPete.com. Check out the Sriracha Cha Sauce. It's wedding season, and while weddings are all about the bride and groom, they're also a chance for you to look your best. With a fully custom suit from Indochino, you'll walk into wedding season looking like $1 million, even though suits start at just $499. It's easier than ever to be the best dressed with Indochino. Order your custom suits now, and they'll be ready for wedding season. The process of customizing a suit on Indochino, very easy to do. It's also a lot of fun. I've talked about my navy blue suit I've gotten from Indochino. First off, you can decide how the jacket is, how you want the pockets on the jacket to be, how you want the lapels, the vent on the back, the lining on the pants. You can decide you want pleats or no pleats. I went no pleats on my pants on this one. And then you do the measuring process. You'll need someone to help you, but they have this very easy-to-follow guide. Send that all in a few weeks, you have a custom made-to-measure suit sent directly to your door, and you're going to pay about the same price for a suit that you'd pay for an off-the-rack suit at a department store. Look your best this wedding season at the table or on the dance floor when you wear Indochino. Go to Indochino.com today and use code MANLINESS to get 10% off any purchase of $399 or more. That's Indochino.com, promo code MANLINESS. Check it out today. There's a famous Abraham Lincoln quote that goes something like, "Good things come to those who wait." But that's only part of the quote. The full quote is, "Good things come to those who wait, but only the things left by those who hustle." Well, if you're a business owner and want the best people on your team, the same applies. Thankfully, ZipRecruiter puts the hustle in your hiring, so you can find qualified candidates fast. And now you can try it for free at ZipRecruiter.com/manliness. ZipRecruiter's smart technology finds top talent for your roles right away. Immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's matching technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Let ZipRecruiter give you the hiring hustle you need. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to ZipRecruiter.com/manliness to try it for free. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/manliness. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire.
So, you have a section in there about how to combat clear your home. That seems like it'd be a pretty dangerous thing to do. I mean, under what circumstances would you want to do that? And under what circumstances would you not want to do that?
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of people that own guns, first of all, they know that, okay, I hear a noise or somebody kicks in my door. You know, I'm grabbing my gun. I'm calling 911. And then that's kind of where it stops. So I wanted to make it very clear to people that, hey, you know, there's a right and a wrong way of clearing your home if you choose to do so. And this is a very personal decision. This is for the alpha males out there. I mean, yeah, they're going to call them. Priority is to get help and get it coming. But if help is 15 minutes away, or you live even more rural and you know help is, you know, 30 minutes away, well, then there's certain things you're going to have to do for yourself. And there's a lot of factors here, right? If you live alone, then sure, you can, you're alone. You're an alpha kind of guy. I'm going to clear my house. I'm not running. But if you have family and kids, then obviously maybe, you know, your primary plan is to get everybody out of the home into safety. But for those moments where you feel like you're going to clear the house, or you can't run, or you can't hide, or you know help isn't coming anytime soon, then I wanted to let people know, like, or at least show them and give them some guidance on how to pie doorways and how to pie corners properly, so that you're not putting yourself right in someone's sights. Because the goal with, you know, clearing your home is to clear it, you know, safely, where you can determine, you know, what the current security posture is. Make sure you are looking out for yourself first, and not put yourself, you know, right in someone's sights. So, clearing a home isn't I wouldn't consider it advanced at all, but it's just giving some simple tactics on kind of the do's and the don'ts, and talking about the fatal funnel and, you know, where people's eyes are attracted to, you know, in a combat clearance situation, which is doorways, you know, and you kind of want to stay out of the doorways. You want to pie them properly. You can look at a large percentage of a room, just by pieing a certain way, and how you sidestep and how you leverage your gun and your field of view.
What do you mean by pieing?
You're basically slicing. If you're coming around a corner, you're using the corner, that wall, you know, to one, conceal yourself, but by sidestepping away and not just, you're not just button hooking around a corner and trying to TJ Hooker it. You know what I mean?
Right.
So, you know, you're not trying to do that. You're literally dissecting the room while still leveraging the corner of a hallway or of a room to protect yourself and shield yourself, but still being able to dissect the room in pieces and clear it from head to toe. And it's hard to verbally describe it, and that's why the illustrations do such a great job, and along with the narrative.
Right. So another sort of similar to home invasion is carjacking. Is this a common thing, or is this becoming less common? And if it does happen to you, like, what do you do?
Yeah, this is more of a opportunistic, you know, kind of predator's skill, right? You know, this is someone maybe on the run that's needs a vehicle. But it's also becoming, they're probably happening more often overseas than here in the U.S. So anybody who travels will benefit from some of those skills. But it's also happening at, like, ATM machines where to drive up ATM machines where you're more vulnerable. So there's three really scenarios that can happen. You know, you're walking to your vehicle and somebody says, "Hey, you know, give me your car, give me your keys." There's, you know, the one that we think about the most is, you know, you're driving, you stop at a red light, stop at a stop sign, all of a sudden there's a gun pointed at you at the driver's window. And then there's another tactic is coming in through the passenger door. All of a sudden somebody's sitting next to you with a gun to your head, where they're making you the driver. So there's different scenarios and different ways to deal with it. But the big takeaway is knowing that you're driving anywhere between a 4,000 to 6,000 pound weapon, and when you're talking about that external threat, and you're in the cabin of your own vehicle, one, everyone needs to know that all terrain is drivable. And anytime you go to any of the offensive or defensive driving schools, I mean, you'll hear that more than anything else. All terrain is drivable. So what does that mean? That's sidewalks, grass. You know, you're not confined to the white and yellow lines. So you have to think kind of outside the box. We get kind of stuck, you know, oh, there's a sidewalk there, you know, but, you know, you can drive right over that if you need to. But in order to take advantage of drivable terrain, you have to give yourself space. So when you're driving, especially maybe in high threat areas, or you're traveling overseas, or maybe you're doing business in Mexico City, I mean, it just kind of really depends where you're going and what you're doing, but you want to give yourself plenty of space between the vehicles in front of you and around you so that you can leverage that drivable terrain if somebody shows up at your driver's side window with a weapon. And so once you have that drivable terrain, now if a gun breaches that kind of the threshold of the driver's side door or window, you can trap that weapon and hit the gas at the same time. And when I say trap, I mean literally you're grabbing that weapon and pushing it to the dashboard and then pushing the gas and driving out of there. That guy is not going to be able to do much as soon as you do that. And then, of course, once you start driving, keep driving. and, you know, get yourself out of danger, get yourself off the X.
Right. What happens in the event, say the guy gets in the car and got the gun to you? I mean, what should be your strategy then?
You know, I always push. You know, you're always looking for the first opportunity of escape. You never want to let yourself get to the second or third stop. You know, that's when survivability and chances of escape become increasingly more complicated. So the sooner you can, you know, literally, you don't even need to throw the thing in park. You know, as soon as you can slow down, get out. If it's someone approaching you, like a parking garage situation, you know, it's, I put in there, you know, you need a kind of a distractor and then increase distance, you know, so whether that's throwing your keys, not necessarily at the guy, but throwing them off to the left and then you run right, you know, it's a typical kind of juke left, go right movement. And this is where identifying cover becomes so important. You know, we talk about cover as anything that stops bullets. Concealment is equivalent to, like, you know, the curtains in your home. You stand behind it. Yeah, you're hidden, but it's not going to stop a bullet. So, you know, this is where, once again, going back to awareness, you know, you're constantly kind of looking around the difference between cover and concealment, and you want to always identify cover. And if you're in a parking garage situation, large structural pillars, you're throwing your keys one way, you know you're going to run from pillar to pillar to pillar, increasing distance between you and the threat. And if it's truly your car they want, give it up. I mean, that's number one. Just like your wallet, there's nothing more precious than your life. So give it up. It's insured, and just get the distance between you and them. Of course, if you're a concealed carry kind of guy, then, you know, and the guy's already got the draw on you, well, at that point, you just have to decide, you know, if you're gonna take that risk as well and draw your weapon and blast the guy. But, you know, sometimes for, you know, the average guy that's doing business every day and doesn't carry any weapons, then yeah, throw your keys one way, you run the opposite, and get away from them.
So in the last book, the first book, you talked about active shooter situations, and you revisit again in this book. I'm curious, has anything changed from, you know, the first time you wrote the book to what you put in the book this time around?
Well, this time, the first time around was kind of more holistic in nature. You know, it was kind of like just run, hide, fight. And that's, you know, a philosophy that I teach in my day job. And also, you know, the FBI supports 100%. And, you know, I got a lot of people out there that, you know, have different acronyms, different things, but really it boils down to, you know, running. If you can run, you should. Increasing your distance from a shooter is always a good thing. If you can hide, you know, then hide behind things that stop bullets, and make sure when you hide, know that it's temporary. You don't want to be a sitting duck. And then, of course, fight. You know, if you're going to fight, fight as a team. Improvised weapons are everywhere. Use them. If you're going to take down someone, and that's where it rolls into, okay, now book two. I talk about active shooter takedowns, you know, how to trap that weapon, how to take someone down properly. You know, it's basic MMA, macro, big motor movements, because fine motor movements aren't going to work under stress. You know, so we want to be able to, you know, you look at the bottom of the spine, the top of the spine. You have your head, you have your hips. And the way you control the body is either you control the hips or you control the head. So, you know, one person is designated for head or hips, and then another person's designated for the weapon. I go through and illustrate just some examples. You know, there's no right and wrong when it comes to this stuff. It's just win, 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 right? So, and then I took it a little bit further, and we're talking about theater shootings, stadium shootings. You know, I kind of break down different tactics and giving people more tactical mindset, you know, that you don't want to go with the flow necessarily when people start, you know, panicking. You know, sometimes it's better to, you know, obviously get down and ID the shooter, because the last thing you want to do is run towards fire, which a lot of people do when they panic, because they just hear the shots. They don't pay attention to where they came from. So I kind of start really digging down into some different tactics that people can leverage in different environments in the second book, which really boils down to the headlines. We keep hearing about it in the headlines. So this second book, I wanted to tackle everything that's in the headlines.
Right. So another skill you talk about, going back to cars, is a sinking car, right? You're driving, maybe a bridge collapse, and you're underwater in your car. How do you escape a sinking car?
Yeah, I still find it concerning and entertaining that, you know, you watch the news and see people being swept away, you know, by these flash floods. And it baffles me that people continue to think they can drive a vehicle through, you know, potentially 5-knot current cruising across the street. You know, it's the opposite of hydroplaning, you know, it's the water pushing you instead of you sliding across. And I think people underestimate this stuff, all the time. But it really can go bad very quickly. So I'm giving options to people. One, reroute. If there's traffic and everyone's trying to just, you know, slowly motor across this, you know, the rapids in front of them, you know, don't be that guy. You know, go ahead, back up, reroute. There's always another route. But if you find yourself channelized or the traffic's so bad you can't back up, or you didn't give yourself any drivable terrain, then okay. You know, you or somehow the, you know, things go bad and now you're being swept away. You know, one, a glass brake tool in your vehicle is number one, and have it in a compartment that you can get to. You don't want it sitting in, like, you know, the cup holder, to where, you know, any major hit and it's going to end up on the floorboard and you can't even reach the thing. Two, know that, hey, power windows, you know, get them open, create the exits, sunroofs, create the exit. You have time as long as you can control the panic. Knowing the difference between, like, you know, your windshield and then the rest of the glass of the vehicle. It's two different kinds of glass. Don't waste your time trying to kick out a windshield or break it. You know, it's better to go for your passenger or driver's side windows, break them, and go out. Sunroofs, obviously, if you can go out that way. But then I go through, all right, now, okay, what's some other ways? You know, there's the common sense ways, then there's some other ways. Your headrest, if you literally dislocate it, pull it out, and we actually got to do it where you take the, you know, headrest is really just two bars stuck down into the seat. You can remove the whole thing, and the bars have points on the end, or the rods, and you wedge it between, you know, the molding where you're at the bottom of your door, and when the glass meet, you kind of turn it into a fulcrum, stick it down in there, pull back, and boom, the glass will shatter and out you go. And it's important to note the two different kinds of glass, right? You have safety glass, which is your passenger windows, front and back, right? Driver's side windows, all your side windows. But your windshield is tempered. It's laminated, sorry. And so it's built to withstand projectiles flying at it. I mean, that's why the windshield is a much different kind of treated glass, and it's the last one that you want to try and shatter or break, because it's very difficult. So always aim for, like, passenger driver's side windows when you talk about breaking a window and getting out. But ideally, you have these windows already open, and you're giving yourself an easy means of escape, and understand the dynamics of a vehicle, too. You know, when you talk about deep water, you know, the engine end of the vehicle is going to sink first, and you kind of want to get out of the vehicle and go away from the weight, you know. So if you're in a sports car and your engine is in the rear, well, then you're going to get out and go towards the hood. And if your engine is, you know, obviously in the front like most vehicles, well, then you're going to get out and move towards the trunk. So there is some logic in all this, but, you know, most people forget it under stress. That's why it's important to kind of think this stuff through. So that if it ever happens, you know what to do.
So another scenario that you covered in the book that I had never heard of before, that I thought was interesting, is this idea of virtual kidnappings. What's a virtual kidnapping, and how do you handle those?
Yeah, so these are on the rise. And what it is one big hoax. And it relies a lot on someone understanding or knowing your pattern of life. These days, we put our pattern of life all over social media. And that's why it's important not to, you know, post everything real time. No one needs to know that you're, you know, at the airport right now, or no one needs to know that you're, you know, on vacation, or that you're traveling abroad, because this is all pattern of life information that bad guys use, especially for virtual kidnappings. And just a couple of weeks ago in the national news was a mom who thought her daughter had been kidnapped. And so what these guys do, they'll call you up and they'll say, hey, you know, we've got your daughter, And then they'll give you a series of directions and have you go around from ATM machine to ATM machine. And then either give you a drop site or use some kind of, you know, Western Union, you know, money transfer. And they'll do that. And so they terrorized her basically for 5 hours straight. Here she's thinking her daughter had been kidnapped, when the reality is her daughter was still exactly where she was, and that was at school. But what these guys, and it's important to note, you know, the difference between a real kidnapping and a virtual one. The virtual one, where no one's been kidnapped, but they have you believe that they've got your kid. And then you, of course, a parent that knows, that loves their kid, or any, I mean, any concern whatsoever, is going to do what someone says on the other line. But just keep in mind, it's one big hoax. So knowing the differences between a real kidnapping and a virtual one is important. So a virtual one, they're going to keep you on the phone for as long as they can, because they don't want you to get off the phone and check in with your loved one. Whereas a real kidnapping, they're going to call you from your daughter's phone, just to, you know, that sends the message. Okay, it's a call from my daughter's phone, and it's someone else on the line saying, I have your daughter. And they're going to keep their phone calls very short. So caller ID and time on the phone are big indicators of whether you're dealing with a real world event or a hoax. Okay. Second, the amount of money they ask for. If they're asking for, hey, go to ATM machines and pull out a couple hundred bucks here and there, you know, you might get $1,000 out of it. It's probably virtual, because a real kidnapper, they're relying on big, big money. So they're not spending a lot of time on the phone because they don't want to be tracked, traced. And then they're asking for big, big numbers. They're probably going to ask for, you know, have you drop it at a drop site. And then with the virtual, they'll use a lot of like social engineering and just psychology and play on your emotions. And that's really what it is one big emotional hoax. And they'll tell you, hey, you know, we're watching you. We're going to watch you when you go to the ATM machine. We're watching you the whole time. If you hang up, you know, we're going to kill your daughter. It's a horrible event, but it's becoming more and more popular now. And so this is where it goes back to social media. You don't need to post what you're doing when you're doing it, you know, especially if you're flying from New York to London. Everyone knows that's a 5-hour flight. You know, that's 5 hours that a loved one cannot communicate with you. And these guys are pretty smart. They won't go deal with the mom and the dad. They'll hit the grandmother or the grandfather and work them, because they're going to be a little, probably further disconnected from what the loved one has actually got going on. And they're going to do nothing but believe this person because they're older and they think it's real. And, you know, they're probably easier to trick. So anyway, the book breaks all this down and illustrates it, you know, with great illustrations to kind of depict the difference between the two.
Right. Well, hey, Clint, there's a lot more we could talk about. I mean, like I said in the book, or at the beginning of the podcast, you talk about how to survive in desert situations, Arctic, on a deserted island, things like that. So where can people find out more about the book and your work?
All of the links to buy the book is at 100deadlyskills.com. That's 100deadlyskills.com. And the book is sold where all books are sold. I mean, whether it's you're at the airport or Barnes & Noble, you can pick one up. I highly recommend actually getting the book, because they're built to withstand blood and water.
No, yeah, it's a nice, it feels like a survival manual.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Clint, this has been a great conversation. Thank you so much for your time. It's been a pleasure.
Hey, thank you, Brett.
My guest today was Clint Emerson. He's the author of the book, 100 Deadly Skills, Survival Edition. You can find that on Amazon.com and bookstores everywhere. You can find out more information about the book at 100deadlyskills.com. Also, check out the show notes at aom.is/deadlyskills, where you can find links to resources where you can delve deeper into this topic. Well, that wraps up another edition of the Art of Manliness podcast. For more manly tips and advice, make sure to check out the Art of Manliness website at artofmanliness.com. Our show is edited by Creative Audio Lab here in Tulsa, Oklahoma. If you have any audio editing needs or any audio production needs, check them out at creativeaudiolab.com. We appreciate your support. If you can give us a review on iTunes or Stitcher, that really helps us out a lot. Thank you again for your continued support. And until next time, this is Brett McKay telling you to stay manly.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. In fact, Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/podcastfree. All lowercase, shopify.com/podcastfree, shopify.com/podcastfree.